Okay, yeah, looks like everything's working. So, yeah, good to see you folks this evening. And yeah, so I'm just going to say, for the sake of the folks who are tuning in on Facebook, that this is Heart of Freedom Meditation. I'm Doug Pullen, and it's Thursday, the 19th of October. So, now this kind of makes it a marathon evening for Rita and Anne. You're quite the troopers here. So yeah, that's impressive. So James, I'm teaching the basics of mindfulness class, and both Anne and Rita are in that class as well. And we started at 6, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of practice tonight. That's great.
Yeah. Yep.
Hence, I'm getting my dinner in between the classes.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah. So it's, about time. Feel free to finish eating, Rita. I mean, that's totally fine. And we'll go ahead and kind of do a gentle startup here with folks. Yeah. So welcome, Michelle. Good to see you. Let's see, there's more folks coming. There's Karen and Doug. Yeah.
Yeah, I really need it today.
Oh, well, good. Well, it's great to see you. Yeah.
Uh-huh. My mom is in an emergency.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, shall we go ahead and get started? So just to take our seats. Yeah, and as we get settled in this evening, just an invitation to remember good fortune that we have to have this opportunity to practice and to reflect on what the conditions are that make it possible for us to come together this evening. The choices and just the circumstances in life, the qualities of grace and certain factors that'll just allow us to practice the Dharma together, to practice meditation, and to welcome ourselves and each other into this space of community that wakes up together. And to start with this welcoming, to really receive the gifts that are here in the present moment in the form of this body that sits, points of contact where there's the reminder of presence, this capacity to be alert, to be awake, and to whatever degree is possible, to set aside any preoccupations, cares, concerns, just letting those fade in the background for us to really kind of settle in or center in to the experience of being present. And is there any attending to this body that needs to happen? Is there tension or constriction? Places where we're holding on to stress that we can, as we settle, we can notice and maybe just allow to soften or even release. Not that we're trying to force anything, it's more just an invitation. And you know, places in the body that could sometimes use a little TLC that you might be familiar with, just to check in. And if it's helpful to let the breath deepen, maybe a long, slow, deep breath or two. And to take up the practice of being present with the sensations of breathing from within the body itself. So knowing the experience of the breath from within the breath. And in this moment, perhaps we can also be aware that we can take refuge or find safety and peace in this capacity to be aware, to be awake, and to take refuge in discovering for ourselves what's true, and to take refuge and find safety in community, in our support that we offer ourselves and each other coming together to practice like this. Taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. And to take this breath, or the most predominant object, as our home base, place of refuge, letting go of being lost in the kaleidoscope of thinking and judgments and commentary, shifting into noticing with kindness and with acceptance what's true in this moment. See if it's possible to stay patient and persistent in attending to the breath or the most predominant object. And what that means is, if the mind gets lost in thinking, identified with thoughts, there's always this breath to come back to, this moment, these sensations of the touch of the breath at the tip of nostrils, or the expanding and contracting of the chest, or the rising and falling of the belly. Noticing the movement of the breath across the torso, like kind of like a wave, the wave-like motion as it ripples and recedes. just simple and bare recognition of what is the nature of experience in the present moment can really help with deepening practice. So, for example, as we take the breath or some other usually physical sensation as our primary focal point, is it more an experience of unpleasantness in this moment, or is it more pleasant, or is it kind of in between? Is it more neutral? If we're able to notice it at this really simple, basic feeling level, then that can help to keep things simple without it kind of morphing into something that's, carries the mind away, getting lost in resisting the unpleasant or ignoring it or distracting or clinging to the pleasant and then feeling the anguish when it disappears, when it changes. Just the simple, direct experience of how is it in this moment? Is it more pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? And how does that show up in the body with this breath? And the invitation is to be aware with a tenderness and a kindness, not judging, not getting caught up and identified with commentary. Just simple, just it's like this. with experience of the breath and embodied present moment awareness as the primary focal point, there is a welcoming of all forms of feeling and thinking, body sensation. So ultimately, nothing is rejected. This evening, we're focusing more on feeling, feeling tone as a precursor to working with fear or anxiety. So it starts right here in this moment with welcoming what's here. It doesn't mean that we like it or that we're disliking. It just means that in this moment it's like this. This is what the predominant feeling tone is. So just an invitation as we stay as present as possible, returning to connecting with life in the present moment, to notice what the predominant kind of emotional state is, which may have a feeling quality to it, of pleasant or unpleasant, but is this state of consciousness that we're in right now, or that's passing through, more one that's peaceful, calm? Or is it more agitated, restless? Is it colored by anger? Or is it more full of kindness and love? Is there sleepy dullness? Or is the mind really crisp and clear and concentrated? These are just a few examples without judging, because none of these are who we really are. They're just passing states, just temporary occupants of consciousness. It's constantly changing. But to notice, yeah, is there fear present, or is there a sense of calm, peace, safety? And it might be possible we stay in mindful presence to notice how mindfulness of fear isn't afraid. Mindfulness of anger isn't angry. This, whatever state is a state that's transitory. It isn't I'm angry or I'm afraid. It's just the anger, the fear, or the joy, or the peacefulness. And as this meditation comes to a close, yeah, just maybe deliberately, consciously really recenter in the breath, to stay with the breath for a few consecutive breaths here before the bell rings. So if it's helpful to be reminded that we can continue to practice with what's most predominant or up in consciousness, even though the formal meditation has ended, there might be some movement or stretching that needs to happen. So let's take that as a sacred act, as a part of our awakening experience here. Yeah, so it's all an opportunity to, yeah, take this as the grist for the mill of awakening. There's a body that's aching. How can I attend to and move mindfully, kindly, with this piece of the living earth, this experience of life that's constantly in flux and changing. Yeah. So just a brief reminder of the heart-centered practice of Dana, practice of generosity. There's so much generous energy that makes an evening like this possible. And all of those who've contributed in any way, thank you. Thanks for all of the volunteers and everyone who's supported the center financially and with your just supportive energy. So, and if you'd like to continue to kind of pay it forward, I posted a link in the chat there for your, just a reminder, consideration. And then there's some other pieces of info there to look at. And the only other announcement that I have is just Jim Dalton is offering a day-long Qigong and meditation practice this coming Saturday. I think it's an all-day thing. So you can go to the PortlandInsight.org website for more information on that. So this evening, I thought I would offer us an opportunity to do a blessing circle towards the end and sharing. So I'm at a start with the Dharma talk, and then we'll see what emerges in terms of if there's sharing or questions. I'd like to start with a poem. It's a poem been around for a long time, but it seems appropriate for our reflection this evening on fear. This is from Wendell Berry. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet around me like circles on water. My tasks lie in their places where I left them a asleep like cattle, then what is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. What it fears in me leaves me, and the fear of me leaves it. It sings, and I hear its song. Then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. That poem is reflective of some of the experiences that I've had working with fear. That it comes and it goes, and it's arises and passes away. Some contemporary philosopher said that we live in the age of anxiety. Seems to be true. It appears that we live in a culture where there's a lot of people in power that use fear as a way to control and influence. In general, just information access and sometimes overload can kind of exceed our capacities to process and understand and not be reactive or shut down to what we're listening to or watching or reading. When war breaks out, like what's happening in Gaza and Israel, can certainly be activating and kind of re-traumatizing or traumatizing. There's ways in which, of course we need to know what's going on and be informed and pay attention and speak out. To also be aware of the ways that people in positions of power might try to use fear as a way to make us more compliant, more willing to surrender our rights, to notice, just how fear operates in times like this. To just notice how looking through the filtering of fear can have an effect to make us less open to seeing new possibilities, because we're seeing the future or maybe the past through the lens of fear. This can lead to unskillfulness. And it isn't that concerns about the world lack legitimacy, obviously. It's undeniable that there's a lot of disturbing things happening and instability and unwise actions and indifference that have an impact, of course, that's there. Just as an example, in our own country, not looking overseas, I support the Southern Poverty Law Center. And occasionally I get notices. Today I got a text from them that according to the FBI's latest hate crime report, the United States is experiencing the highest levels of hate and violence on record. So there's that. That's happening. That's out there. And particularly, if you are a BIPOC person or a person of color or Jewish or LGBTQ or a woman or a person who's differently abled. This can be a particularly fearful time. And as a larger society, we need to do everything we can to understand and support minority populations. And I didn't mention, but I'll just mention, Palestinian people have been targeted. So, I mean, the conflict overseas shows up here. It's horrific, and it can be a terrifying. And we need to do everything we can to understand and support minority populations who often live in cycles of re-traumatization. If we aren't in a minority group, per se, it's really important for us to listen and hear the fear that they experience. Then those who are more privileged, those who are doing better than others, can also experience fear. Those who are privileged have the fear of losing their privilege. So there's that. So fear shows up in lots of different ways. So it's really a universal thing. Here's the dukkha, or one of the aspects of dukkha with fear. If it isn't observed with mindfulness, it tends to distort what we see. It tends to focus primarily on negative, exaggerates the threats, filters out alternative views, may cause us to compromise on our core values out of a perceived need for survival, to act in ways that are harmful based on fear rather than wisdom and understanding. And fear, when it isn't named, tends to narrow our vision, shuts down our intuition and common sense, and promotes violent actions. Now, stated more simply, fear that is not recognized and tended to with mindfulness and compassion tends to take the life out of life. Our life energy is lost in dread and shut down and constriction. Or reactivity. So just to say this evening, to start with dukkha, which is where the Buddha started, it's difficult living in a time of fear. And here we are, important to use our practice to turn towards it. And the challenge becomes finding ways to not be consumed by it, to not be overwhelmed or lost in despair, and this can be accomplished in part by observing internally our responses to the culture of fear that we might be living in, and then use this to work with our personal fears. To work with this and deepen our practice. And as practice deepens, in my experience, we inevitably come into contact with all of our fears, some of which we may not have even known are within us. And being alert and curious about fear actually allows us to experience it as a teacher, to serve as growth, And it becomes grist for the mill for awakening. It seems to me that fear is the kind of the primary motive behind what the Buddha called the three poisons, or the three causes of suffering. So, for example, those three are greed, hatred and ignorance or delusion. And just I invite for your consideration. Don't take my word for it. Check out for yourself. Is this true? Any of what I'm saying, based on your experience, does greed have an underpinning of a fear of deprivation? Does hatred have its roots in the fear of harm? Does ignorance or delusion come from the fear of knowing and feeling painful truths and conditions? And also, is fear a motive for us to come to spiritual practice? Does the pain of suffering, the fear of sickness, old age, death, grief, sorrow, all of those things, is that part of what brings us to a practice like this? So it's multifaceted in terms of its makeup. It's both a source of suffering, and it's also what can potentially lead us to the path that ends suffering. So it's both. It's both and. Here's a quote from a Vajrayana teacher. His name is Tharpa. He said, "The cause of all fear is self-grasping ignorance, and all of the delusions such as selfishness, attachment, and anger arise from that ignorance, as well as from this unskillful actions motivated by those delusions." I'd like to share with you this evening a quote. I was thinking about actually basing my entire talk on this, and I don't think I'm going to, but I find it fascinating. This is another Vajrayana, a Tibetan Buddhist teacher, Andrew Holik, and here's what he said. He said, "Fear is the minion of ignorance. Where you find ignorance, you will always find fear." This is important because ignorance itself is so subtle. It's virtually invisible. It's another massive blind spot, something that we are asleep to. It's easy to identify mental patterns that obscure our true nature, such as passion, aggression, jealousy, pride. But I've never been able to say I'm having an ignorance attack. This is an irony, because if I see the world as solid, lasting, and independent, dualistically, I'm under attack. It means I'm under attack right now. I just don't see it. This blindness is particularly damaging because every other mental emotional state is there, and therefore all suffering arises from this one, the stealth bomber of ignorance. You could say ignorance is the primary cause of suffering. We have a notion of mistaken identity. We don't see the pattern that connects, that we're all inexorably intertwined. So you can use fear, which is more visible, to work with your ignorance. When you feel fear, you're getting down to it. You're approaching some level of ignorance, and therefore the opportunity to transcend it. If you're serious about waking up in this life and don't know where to go or what to do, go to the places that scare you. in summary, fear, the primordial emotion of dukkha, of samsara, is the active expression of ignorance. Ignorance is usually too subtle to see, but fear is something that we can all relate to. This ignorance is basically unfamiliarity, not knowing who we really are. By becoming familiar with, which is the very definition of meditation, who we are, we transform ignorance into wisdom, darkness into light, and replace fear with fearlessness. So that is kind of a Dharma talk unto itself. That quote came from my teacher, Matt Flickstein. So fear, the gateway to unearth ignorance. And fear is underneath a lot of other emotions, like I was saying. When we don't fear or understand another person, we might be angry with them or project unwanted, the things that we can't see in ourselves that we're ignorant about onto them and make them the enemy. In the worst case scenario, we go to war based on our fear and ignorance. To work with this, to actually turn towards fear, we need resources on board. We need a capacity to hold space for fear. And mindfulness and concentration, compassionate presence, kindness are some of those resources to be able to calm our nervous system down enough that we can actually, first of all, recognize fear is present. Because without the recognition, then we can't really work with it. And then to allow it to be there in consciousness. Because most of the problem with it is that it gets acted out instead of observed. Here's a quote from Krishnamurti. He said, "What is needed rather than running away or controlling or suppressing or any other resistance is understanding fear. That means watch it, learn about it, come directly into contact with it. When we are here to learn about fear, not how to escape from it." And Pema Chodron. Usually we think that brave people have no fear. The truth is that they're intimate with fear. When I was first married, my husband said, I was one of the bravest people he knew. When I asked him why, he said, because I was a complete coward, but went ahead and did things anyhow. And I kind of feel like that too. Through this practice over time, I've learned not to let fear and anxiety drive the bus, be in charge of this mind-body process that's referred to as Doug. I wouldn't be able to teach if anxiety and fear were driving the bus. It's observed. Of course, it's there. It's part of the primary practice for me is welcoming it. There's my old friend. And then to observe what the what form of ignorance might there be? Usually it's believing in some form of a separate self, or believing that things that are that are impermanent are permanent, or believing that clinging to the pleasant and resisting the unpleasant somehow is possible and that it'll lead to lasting satisfaction. So those are the primary forms of ignorance that I discover that are based on or lead to fear. I found also that loving kindness practice is a classic antidote for fear. If we see through the lens of love, which is there's room for everything, that includes everything, me, you, whatever belief system, whatever ignorance is coming up, observing that, then I'm not afraid of what's out there in the same way, even though it may remain just as difficult. So our relationship to fear and to ourselves are changed by experiencing the threatening aspects of life through the lens of metta. Doing loving kindness practice can help with that. There's a poem by Michael Lunig, and the poem is, there's only two feelings. There's only two feelings, love and fear. There are only two languages, love and fear. There are only two activities, love and fear. There are only two motives, two procedures, two frameworks, two results, love and fear, love and fear. So we can all begin or continue practicing mindfulness with fear when it arises, when the mind seems to be caught in a storm of thoughts about how bad the world is or about something in our own lives. We can take a moment to just notice what happens in the body and notice how the mind is communicating with images or words. And remember to be curious and receptive without taking any of it personally, just letting your heart open to the angst of it that the fear is causing. Here's a quote from Ajahn Sumedho, who was a senior Western Thai monk or in the Thai forest tradition. He said, much of your personality is based on fear. And so in awareness, where there is no personality, belief, or self-view, fear ceases. I'll repeat that. Much of your personality is based on fear. So in awareness, where there is no personality or personality, belief, or self-view, fear ceases. No self, no problem. Another way of describing it. When we aren't identified with the mind stories, this is who I am. I like this, I don't like that. They're different from me. Oh, yeah, I'm threatened. When the mind doesn't identify with those stories, there's no fear. Fear ceases. And I'm sure all of us have experienced that momentarily. So to be able to hold space or turn towards fear requires, being able to begin. I mean, we have to calm the nervous system down if we're really activated. And there's lots of different ways of doing that, maybe with breathing or some physical activity, but then turning towards it and being able to recognize that It's like this, that it's made up of these different pieces. And then, you know, noticing body sensation is a great place to start. Yeah, I feel this tightness in the pit of my stomach. What's the mind telling itself? What's the mind story? Is that really true? Is that an accurate perception? So part of taking refuge in Dharma, taking refuge in the truth, is we don't have to believe everything we think and perceive. Thich Nhat Hanh said, every time a negative energy is embraced by the energy of mindfulness, it loses a little bit of its strength. The same thing is true of all the mental formations or emotions, fear, anguish, anxiety, despair. They exist in us in the form of seeds. And every time one of the seeds is watered, it becomes a zone of energy on the upper zone of our consciousness. If you don't know how to take care of it, it can cause damage. It will push us to do or say things that damage us and damage the people that we love. Therefore, generating the energy of mindfulness to recognize it, to embrace it, to take care of it, that's the practice. And to remember our shared humanity in it. Of course, all beings are afraid, get afraid. This isn't cause for judgment. What's wrong with me that I'm afraid? Of course, this is part of being human. It's instinctual, it's a survival response. And it's based on kind of a belief in a separate self that needs to survive in the world. As we grow spiritually, we begin to see how interdependent life is. Our sense of separation diminishes and fear starts to loosen its grip. And for this reason, it's sometimes said that a person who has fully realized the Dharma is completely without fear. For the rest of us, there's the ever-present need for practice. But it's important to know that there is that space, that possibility. Yeah. So there's a story that's often told of a monk who lived in isolation in a cave where he painted beautiful murals on the wall as part of his meditation practice. With his strongly developed concentration and acquired skill, he painted a ferocious tiger that appeared as real as any live one. It seemed so real, it scared him to death. All things that arise in the mind are like the monk's brushstrokes on the cave wall. None of them, not even the ones that seem to be the most solid, are composed of lasting, unchanging substance. When the fear in us feels stuck, it's important to realize that we're clinging to a perception that's merely painted on the walls of the mind. It's the clinging, not the danger, no matter how genuinely threatening it might be, that is the cause of the greatest distress. The proper response is three things: continue mindfulness of fear, deep compassion for the suffering that it causes, and the cultivation of equanimity that allows us to stay with it. Now, I just want to say here, that there's, you know, certain fears that are, of course, important for survival. Like if we're about to put our hand on a hot stove, having a startle response and pulling our hand away. Yeah, of course. Or if I'm about ready to, like, I'm looking at my cell phone and not paying attention, and I'm about ready to step out into the street in front of traffic, and then I realize what I'm doing and I jump back up on the curb. Well, that's kind of what that fear startle response is for. But often the anxiety and fear that we experience isn't about real threats and dangers. It's painting on the walls of the mind. That's what I'm talking about. So, so I thought we could do a little guided meditation this evening, working with fear. Then there'll be an opportunity for us to do sharing in a blessing circle. Everybody is in a little different place, so please check in with your own inner wisdom. And if doing anything that involves turning towards fear for you this evening isn't the right medicine, don't do it. Trust your inner wisdom. And also know that you can adjust what you turn towards to what you're able to manage in a few minutes. So I think of it as like a pool of emotions. There's the shallow end and there's the deep end in the middle. And don't dive into the deep end if you're just starting to begin to work with fear or difficult emotional states. You can start at a level that's manageable for you. So yeah, if you don't feel like you want to do that, then please just stay with circling back to being mindful of breathing. And maybe you could do a loving kindness practice of, yeah, may I be peaceful, or may I abide in well-being, may I be free from fear. Just choose a metaphrase and repeat that instead of tuning into the guidance that I'm offering, so we can keep your practice going. So if you're up for it, yeah, just centering in the breath. Maybe starting with a long, slow, deep breath. Just feeling a sense of connection with the breath and your practice and the quality of kindness that you can bring as wonderful resources that you can tap into. And as you, kind of recenter or connect with the breath, there might be some, fear that you've noticed that's been coming up for you. Like I said before, something that's manageable that maybe you could work with here for a few minutes. And just letting that come to mind. And our intention here really is just to allow it to be felt. Not trying to change it or fix anything. Really just to, notice that how it shows up in the body. Is there a body sensation that's connected to this fear? Maybe it's a fear about, did I lock the door before I left home, or did I pay that gas bill that I was supposed to pay, or whatever it is, just noticing how it shows up, turning towards it, and just allowing it to be felt. And if you're able to locate it as a physical sensation, that's great. It may show up more at first as a memory or some thoughts or an image or even a sound. It could even be a smell or a taste. So just noticing and then beginning to kind of broaden out and explore other sense stores, ways that it might show up. If you find yourself tensing up or constricting around it, to remember that there is a breath, and you can always, if you need to, deepen the breath. And there's also an intention of nurturing and kindness. Like there, that you get to be understanding and kind. Of course, yeah, that this is a little scary or disturbing. So it's not, what's wrong with me, or if there's any judgments or commentary. To just mindfully note those and just let those go. To be here with our shared humanity. This is common. This is a shared human experience. To feel the ouch of it. And to also, see if there's any pattern of thinking that it might be based on or connected to. Not getting lost in the thought, but really observing the thought that might be connected to the feeling and the body sensation. And part of kindness and self-compassion is understanding to the degree that we are identified with the fear or anxiety that it could cause suffering and maybe cause us to do things that we would later regret or that aren't helpful, or just the release of adrenaline or cortisol with fear can be harmful to the body. So just to hold that with compassion, which is really a wish to reduce suffering. And just to bring this to a close here in the next couple of minutes, to check in and see if there's any nourishing or nurturing wish that you'd like to bring to this experience. Just acknowledging, I wish for myself to be free from identification with this fear. May I hold this fear with kindness and understanding. May I see through the ignorance that this fear might be based on. So noticing if there's any wish or words that resonate with your heart and mind. As you're curious about and hold kindness and nurturing. And then to see if it's possible to shift the focus a little bit from being kind of identified with the fear to being the awareness of it, to being the mindfulness that's present. So instead of I'm afraid, it's the fear. It seems like a somatic shift, but it can really be an experiential shift. Feel the difference. It's really okay to comfort yourself with kind words. You can even give yourself a hug. And finally, just a recognition that I'm not alone in these feelings. We all experience fear as human beings. And if you'd like to expand your metta practice to include other beings who you imagine might be feeling something similar or the same, beings that you know, or beings that you know you don't know personally, but you know different places in the world, extending our wishes of love, compassion, and kindness through our intimate connection with our own humanity to connect with the humanity of others around the world. Yeah, we're in this together. We're inexorably intertwined. There aren't any others. Yeah. And so I'd like to just invite us to maybe recenter in the breath here and coming back. Yeah. And if there's any blessing or wish of well-being that we might want to share with the group, to just notice what that is. There'll be an opportunity to share in just a moment. So, yeah, I'm interested and really love to hear any sharing from the group, if there's any blessings or wishes of well-being, or if there's any questions. And my invitation is for you to say your name, and then when you're finished, say I've spoken, and then that lets the next person know that they could take a turn.
Good evening, Sangha and Doug. My name is Doug, and I would like to share a blessing for people who are struggling with dementia and Alzheimer's, who can often be very afraid, and may they feel safe and cared for.
Like to echo Doug what you said earlier and to thank you for caring, because much of my fear is for my family, both here and in Palestine, for anti-Arab, anti-Muslim hate crimes. Some of my family's at risk for those crimes, which are occurring, and here in America that is. So, and then of course, Palestinians are very afraid, especially those in Gaza. War is putting it too gently in some ways, because there is no equal force between two armies. There are not armies. There's one army and a captive civilian population with no means for defense or escape, really. So there's a lot of fear there. So I'm really glad that we are talking about this topic today. Fear, as you said, is always is pretty common, and in some ways a servant, a friend, to keep us safe here, but can also be quite painful and salient. So I'm glad that this topic came up today. Thank you.
Thanks. So just checking, anybody sitting with anything that's just on the cusp of being ready to share? All right, well, let's bring our evening of practice to close, and just an invitation to circle back and kind of maybe continue with our practice of sharing compassionate wishes, whether it's what was shared in the blessing circle, or what's alive for you in your own heart, or both, to extend those are the wishes of compassion. And maybe it's in the form of just an image of relief and safety and peace, or there being enough food and water, or there being a ceasefire, or there whatever seems, or there being a loving, patient family member who's willing to be present with the fear of someone with dementia, or, yeah, whatever that might be, just allowing the compassionate response, and to feel our collective intention coming together this evening as we send these wishes out into the world. Based on our shared humanity, based on our deep understanding, may all beings feel safe, be protected. May all beings abide in well-being. And we can imagine, use imagination skillfully to direct these wishes out, whether it's to dear ones, family, friends, or to beings who are unknown to us, in all directions. May we all remember our true nature. There aren't any others, it's just us. Yeah. And if you'd like to join me in doing a closing chant, you're welcome down in Butte, and we can chant, "May all beings be happy." And just a reminder that the word happiness in this context is really of the understanding of metta, which is, it includes everything. It's beyond liking and disliking. So may all beings be happy. Yeah, and we'll do that three times, and then sadhu, which means so be it, three times. May all beings be happy. So, thank you all for being here with your lovely presence this evening. Please take whatever is useful and really continue to practice. May your practice blossom and be transformative. And anything that's not helpful or useful, just let it go. So, only take what's good. And be safe, and I hope to see you again here next week.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Sangha, so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Doug. Mm-hmm. Good night.
Take care. Bye.